when I started posting, within a day, somebody texted me and said, "Hey, I saw your post, and I'm about to sell my 37 unit. If you're interested, let me know." The owner directly.
The owner.
The owner directly messaged me. Yes.
The owner of a 37 units messaged you directly.
Yes.
Welcome to the Deals Estate Wholesaling Podcast, where we discuss finding, financing, and facilitating off-market real estate deals. I'm your host, DJ Dunton, and I'm joined on the show today by Bara Srinivasan to discuss and share his experience acquiring an off-market multifamily portfolio in Nova Scotia on the Canada's East Coast. So a little bit about Bara. Bara is a successful real estate investor with a passion for personal growth and mindset. He was born and raised in Tamil Nadu before moving to Canada at the age of 18 for school. After completing his degree in Nova Scotia, he traveled around Canada before settling in Montreal around 2019. While working full-time, Bara started his real estate journey. And to date, he has built a portfolio of single-family properties, multifamily properties, and student rentals, and is currently working on massive partnership deals. Bara believes in the power of a morning routine and begins his day with meditation, exercise, and a lot of reading. His motto is "Let's grow together." And if you've seen his Instagram live, that's all it's all about. It reminds him to continue to be dedicated to sharing knowledge to help others achieve financial freedom. In today's episode, Bara and I discuss the acquisition strategies that he's using today to acquire off-market properties in Nova Scotia. We also discuss the power of mindset and how he has used that mindset to grow his real estate portfolio. And finally, we discuss how he's building community with his Let's Grow Together Instagram Live. So guys, you do not want to miss this episode. So be very sure to listen to the very end. Before we dive in, we want to say a big thank you to everyone who is listening to this show. If you are a fan of this podcast, please like and subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Hi, Bara. Welcome to the Deals Estate Wholesaling Podcast.
Hi, Deji. Super blessed to be here. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm super welcomed. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I also feel blessed that you're here today. And this episode has been a long time coming. And I know that you and I have discussed about some of the things that you're doing in the East Coast. I don't know that there's a lot that's been discussed about the opportunities on Canada's East Coast. So I thought it would be helpful to share that experience with everyone and just open everyone's mind to the opportunities that are outside of Ontario. So, you know, thank you very, very much for coming here today. And I know this is going to be a fire episode.
It's my pleasure. And thank you. I can't wait. And it's as you said, it's a long coming. And I really wanted to appreciate for what you're doing. You're bringing so much value to the community. And I've seen your hustle from the day one, and I've seen your growth myself, you know, going from where you are and how you are today. And on top of that, you just want to, you know, share this knowledge and not just yours and bringing other people. So I wanted to thank you for that. And yeah, let's dive deep in.
Okay, perfect. So we usually start off the episode by asking you to tell us about yourself. So who is Bara, and, you know, how did your journey into real estate start?
Yeah, so I would say I'm an investor, you know, based out of Montreal. I still have my full-time job, you know, and which I'm really passionate about. And I started real estate investing in 2019. You know, as everybody just bought the first family home, you know, in a suburb, looking at the market of what we can do and whatnot. And then that's how I got it getting into real estate. It's because of, you know, my wife, and she it was basically we bought our first property, and then we both live in downtown. We were renting in downtown. And then she said, okay, let's go buy a single family home. We bought it. We were supposed to move in big from there. and then we, you know, we went in the drive in the evening, And she looked at me and said, it's dark, nobody's walking, and it's a neighborhood. I don't think so. We would be probably moving here because we are used to downtown life.
Okay.
Right? And then my head started spinning. And then the same night I came in, I started putting ads on Kijiji Marketplace. And then, saying that, I wanted to see rent and see how much is it. So I did my research. I came up with a number. I called my realtor and told her that, hey, can you get me the owner's number? She said, yeah, because I tried to talk to him during the inspection. And then he said, okay, yeah. Okay. And then I got the number. I called him and I said, hey, can you give me Saturday, Sunday, 2 hours? I want to do an open house because I'm planning to rent the house. He was like, okay, no problem. I could do that. I literally created the buzz, took some few appointments, went it on Saturday, Sunday. I was able to rent out before I was closing. So
interesting.
Yeah, it was crazy. And that's what it comes to, where when you're put in the situation of you need to do something, your mind starts working, right? It's like that's how it really happened. And before even closing, we rented the house, and little did I know, I really, like, even I was making cash flow around 380 bucks on the first property. And then like 2 months later, I was like, hey, this is actually really nice. Somebody's paying my mortgage and my insurance, my property tax. And then on top of that, I was able to make 380 bucks. And that money, I can use it for my car payment. And then I was like, okay, let's do this until we live for free. You know, we're having a rental, and let's not use our paycheck. Let's use a passive investment that we're putting in that will help us to live for free. So that was the goal. And then I started networking in Montreal, and I, started to go into real estate.
So this property, this first property was in Montreal?
It was in Brossard. It's in South Shore. It's 15 minutes from downtown. The reason why I was investing there is back in 2019, they were planning to do an electric train from downtown. Okay. So just to people who are listening, in Montreal, we only have underground train. And we have a train that goes like a GO train in Toronto that goes to the different
cities.
But we don't have one train that's connecting from the downtown to the other neighborhoods and to the airport. So we don't have any air train that goes to the airport, right?
Got it. Okay.
So now the city decided, okay, like, we're going to do an electric train that goes, connects all the places. So we are betting on, basically looked at the map and I said, okay, I'm going to go find a house close to the station of the new electric train. So that's how we started sitting in South Shore.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And, I don't know so much about Montreal. I know quite a number of listeners in Ontario. What would you say the major differences are between Montreal and Ontario? Like, I know in Ontario, the big elephant in the room is always rent control. But like, what are the differences between investing in Montreal and investing in Ontario?
So I think the cost of the property is very much less compared to Toronto, right? Because Montreal is very small compared to Toronto in terms of, you could go from east to west in 45 minutes. Right. Like, if you look at that distance, which means, you can cover a whole lot, right? In 45 minutes in Toronto, I don't think so. You could go to one neighborhood, right? Because it's huge. So, and the median salary for Toronto to buy a house is, I was even looking, 190,000 to 220,000 to have a median house, which is around 780,000, right, in Toronto. But compared to that in Montreal, median salary, you could live a decent life for 120,000, right? So 90 to 120, and you can get a house for 580 to 620.
Interesting.
Right? Believe it or not, it's actually cheaper. Some of the houses, like, cost of living is cheaper than, East Coast.
In Montreal?
Yes. Like, you could literally go through, car insurance. You could literally go through, house rents and, car insurance, you could pay 80 to 100 bucks. That's totally unheard of in Toronto. Doesn't matter what car you have. Here, you could range from Range Rovers to Audi to Hyundai and whatnot. It still goes from 80 to 120.
Whoa.
Right? And then that's per month. And if you think that to Ontario, it's completely different, like 300 to 500 bucks, right?
Okay. And in Montreal, is there rent control?
There is a rent control. But the cost of the rent that you compare to other provinces is completely different. Like, for example, in downtown, you could rent a one-bedroom. I'm talking just behind the Bell Center. You could rent a one-bedroom, one-bath with indoor parking for $1,800, which is totally unheard of in Toronto. Like, I can never find something in behind the Rogers Center for, like, less than $3,000.
Okay. Right?
So that's why I see, like, there's a much difference. And there is a reason why the rate is like this, because, you know, they stopped the foreign investors coming in. They had, the tax was more within Quebec. And the culture, right? They're becoming more French-oriented than before. And I feel the more controlled they are, that's why they're able to control this, right? So you won't have a tremendous change in the economy in terms of, you know, the house value won't quadruple like in Toronto. Like, you know, some, I know a lot of people who did pre-construction and then they made 800,000, like new millionaires. They made 800,000 to 1 million equity. That will never happen here. But at the same time, the prices won't be crazy as there, right? In Toronto, or even like, you know, brand new homes within 20 minutes from Montreal, you can buy it for 980,000, it's in a million. I'm talking brand new, right?
Yeah.
Those will never happen in Toronto, right? So there's plus and minus, right? It depends on what your lifestyle is. Even during COVID, you know, people from Toronto, they try to move to Nova Scotia. You know, that's part of the reason where the market increased. I'm talking about single families. When we talk about multifamily, Nova Scotia is different compared to the price per door, and we're doing secondary market or tertiary market. Same in Quebec. You know, in Quebec, where the primary market is different, and if you drive 20 minutes to 30 minutes, you can find still secondary market and tertiary market for price per door. You could go from, you know, 60 to 90, right? 120 to 150. So it totally depends on, you know, how comfortable you are as an investor, you know, how informative you are and who are you partnering with. You just literally don't have to know everything. It's like, right? So,
So I was initially going to ask why you started investing in Nova Scotia, but I remember that you studied in Nova Scotia. So maybe you want to walk us through your thought process around, you know, the fact that you live in Montreal, but you choose to invest in Nova Scotia. I'm sure it's not just because you live there. There must be some fundamentals around about the city that made you want to invest there. So maybe you could walk us through, you know, how your journey took you from living in Montreal and moving to Nova Scotia for
to invest. So the reason why I thanked you at the beginning is because of the value you bring in. It's one of those podcasts that changed my mindset. So me, I'm a very big fan of podcasts, so I listen to a lot of podcasts all the time. So back then, when I was, you know, right into single family homes, and, you know, I bought a few properties within Montreal and surrounding areas, I was listening to a podcast, and this person, you know, talked about investing in New Brunswick, right?
Okay.
So at that point, this was my first idea of investing outside my hometown, outside the province, right? And long distance investing. I never did that before. So when I tried to, you know, listen to the podcast, and he talked about, you know, some tips, you know, why to invest in New Brunswick. So I went and joined a group in New Brunswick and then tried to understand the market, because I knew New Brunswick before as a consumer, because I was living in Nova Scotia. I used to go to Moncton for work. I didn't have an investor mindset. It was basically, I was working, I go there, you know, just do the local stuff and then come back. But I was never looking at house prices, what's the rate, rent control, and how was the landlord-friendly tenants and whatnot. In New Brunswick, if you don't pay the rent, you can send them out the same month, right?
Which is
totally unheard of, right? So, and then once I started, you know, changing the mindset, and I told myself, this is my trial, okay? I'm going to see, I'm going to buy a property without seeing it, which I did. It was a triplex. It was a student rental, and it's a triplex, but we rented as a student rental, 11 bedrooms, right? So I was 11 bedrooms. So I was trying to, you know, call different realtors. I was trying to call property managers, and then literally interviewing them. Instead of they interviewing me, I started interviewing them. I started working with people that are investors themselves. If a realtor is not an investor, he's not going to look out of what I'm looking at.
Yeah,
that's the thing I learned. And then even property managers, I was looking specific for student rentals, not for regular property managers, because student rental property managers, it's a lot of turnovers. So you need to know somebody with who's already doing this and who's already done it, right?
Got it.
That's how, you know, the thing I always talk about is mindset of how I started looking at things, right? Once you have a vision of seeing yourself, how do you want to do it? So you network. And then, you know, so while I was doing all the research, I was calling a lot of property managers, and me, everybody can agree, or even yourself will agree this. You go with the gut feeling when you actually don't see people in person.
Yeah.
You actually, when you talk to them, you see, okay, I really feel good with this guy. So I really, you know, when I talked to this guy, his name is, from Church Street, and his name is Mike. And he was like, hey, I really felt good with Mike. So literally what I did was I took a note. I saw all the property managers. I wrote down how I felt with them, and I'm going to call them back. So I liked this property, and then I put an offer. And when I put an offer, I said, hey, I need to talk to the property manager once the offer is accepted. And guess what? The property manager I liked was the manager that was managing this property.
Oh.
So you talk about, then everything happens for a reason. And then that was there. And then literally I was like, okay, now this is a sign that, you know, I'm going to make it, right? And it was one of the best decisions I ever did, because it was literally completely changing my mindset and going to, you know, Who Not How, the book, and going to, the 4-hour work week, right?
Yeah. So
basically I keep telling people now that imagine you're in the city and you're investing. You have to think like you're not in the city, because that's the only way you're going to buy time, right?
True.
So are you, like, let's say you're skiing with your family, or you're out, you know, in a drive with the family, and your tenant is calling about some issues. Would you want to take that and go back and, you know, fix it, or you would have a property manager? Investing within your backyard and outside province, it's exactly the same thing. If you think like you're actually investing, that I need to know, put the time. When you buy a property, if you put a calculation based on if you're not there, that's exactly how you would propel your energy, right? In terms of make it best use of it. So that's how it came in. And then I was very happy with that. And then I went and saw it after a year and a half. I was super blessed to see exactly how it was. And so I did a random visit. I told my property manager I'm going to see it, but I went and talked to the tenants, and I was super happy about how the property was maintained and how everything is, right? It's always, you know, trust but verify.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
The only way of verification is, you know, going in person and then looking at it, right? But the beyond is just be with the network, you know, find the people that were actually doing what you wanted to do. You don't have to reinvent anything. There's so many people out there, so many groups out there. You just go and join it, make friends, and then connect with them, and then literally be open about it. So next time, when you tell what you want exactly, they'll think, oh, Deji is looking for a triplex in Moncton. So anytime they come across, they will call you. So that's how you're putting stuff in people's head. Right? Just it's like ask and it's given. Just make sure when you tell people, so people remember you, right? Now,
true.
If it's off market, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to go to Deji. So you're literally telling people to train you what you want to hear.
Okay. So this student rental was in Moncton.
Yes.
Okay. And how did you find this property? Was it off market? Was it on the MLS?
This was on the MLS. Yep.
So how did you transition from finding properties on the MLS, you know, to moving to Nova Scotia and then finding off-market properties?
Okay, so even before finding an MLS, so I did find a couple off-market deals in Montreal. It was a pocket listing, right? It was a pocket listing through off-market. It was not even in the market. So I knew a realtor. That's why it's so important to work with the realtors who are investors. Right?
Got it. Okay.
So, and then she was an investor, and she literally found this property here in Montreal, like 30 minutes from Montreal. And she knows the buyer, and she knows the seller, and was not an off market, and the rent was already there to tenants. And I literally went and signed the paper, and it was cash flowing $450.
So this was in Nova Scotia?
No, this was in Montreal.
Oh, in Montreal. Okay. So this was an off-market property. It was an expired listing or an exclusive listing.
It was just a listing that she knew the owner. And then they basically said, hey, I want to sell it. And then she knew that I was an investor. I'm looking for, you know, off-market properties. And then she bought it to me. And then we literally just signed the deal. It was not even on market, and it was a townhouse. Right.
Okay. Perfect. And do you still have that property in your portfolio today?
Yes.
Or did you assign it? Okay.
Yes.
So thanks for pointing this out, because this is one acquisition channel that I know isn't really spoken about a lot. But I like to speak a lot about it because I like to work with realtors a lot. And a lot of people don't take into account that realtors are also like, I consider them one of the largest sources of off-market deals, right? Like every realtor that you come in contact with, chances are that they probably have a property that is about to hit the MLS, or they know a property that maybe has expired, or maybe within their brokerage, you know, they just know a property that is coming. So, yeah, as you said, building relationships with the realtor gives you very, very deep access to off-market deals.
Right? Absolutely. I totally believe in that. And I because it's all about, you know, what relationship you have with that person and telling your vision to that person, right? Yeah. That's why I feel, you know, you have to be super open about, you know, sharing your vision to the person. Even when you're, you know, it'll be nerve-wracking when you're not in the province and you're calling people outside of province and telling them, hey, I want to buy properties, I want to do this. So if you're not selling your vision, how do you think the other person will think that you're serious, right?
True.
And that's exactly how you build a relationship. And you tell them, you know, you be real. I'm not telling you to fake it and to make it. Just be real and tell them, you know, I'm building a portfolio and I want you to be in my team. And this is how I want to work. And when you're serious, people take you seriously, and then you will attract the right people.
Okay. Thank you for that, man. So we started off with getting a property off the MLS in Moncton. Then you moved to getting an off-market property in Montreal. So, you know, how did that translate to
Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia.
So just moving out. I mean, at this point, I was only doing single family, triplex, and, you know, getting into multifamily. So we were reaching at a point where, okay, I need to get into multifamily. So I joined mentorship program. I have a mentor. You know, that's how I started getting into multifamily, to know about what to do with multifamily, how to buy it, right? If you're stuck in your journey, it's a good sign that you need help. Whoever's listening, it's okay to ask help. It's the best way to propel your journey. So once I started getting into this mentorship program, then, you know, in order to search multifamily, I was asking, so how do I search in multifamily, right? So I started getting into the groups of Nova Scotia. So I went in and posted, as I was talking before, hey, I'm an investor based out of in Montreal, but I'm willing to buy multifamilies in Nova Scotia. If you or anybody that you know is willing to sell, I'm here to buy, right? So I started posting that in Nova Scotia community groups, Nova Scotia rentals, and started networking into online meetup groups. So back when this was COVID, you know, I think 2 years, people are doing Zoom meetings where you just join there, and then you tell them, hey, like, I'm willing to buy multifamily, right? And that's how it started. And when I started posting, within a day, somebody texted me and said, hey, I saw your post, and I'm about to sell my 37 unit. If you're interested, let me know. The owner directly. The owner directly messaged me. Yes.
The owner of a 37 units messaged you directly.
Yes.
Just because they saw your post.
That's just, and you know what? I was deji. I was like so curious, like you. I was like, how did you? And I didn't even ask how. The first time, you know, said, oh, let's book a call or let's message. And then I was like, why didn't you message me? Right? I was curious. So, and then I told him, and then he told me, Baba, it's funny that he asked. He was like, I don't go to Facebook a lot. And that's the first time I logged in after a long time. And then I went to the Nova Scotia group. Your message popped up right in the front. So I clicked on your name.
Wow.
And then he said, I saw your name and I saw you're living in Montreal and you're investing in Nova Scotia. And guess what? The owner is the same. He was living in Montreal and he was living. He was selling, planning to sell his portfolio in Nova Scotia. So, and then we got really connected. And then that's how, you know, we got in the deal, right? So there is a big story in the deal, but this is how we started, like, you know, once I started posting, and then that's how I got it getting into, you know, he contacted me.
Interesting. you know, quite a number of the stories that you're sharing seem to be divinely orchestrated. You know, you mentioned the story about the property manager and, you know, how you connected with him, and now how you connected with the seller. Chances are that, you know, what's the odds that the seller was checking Facebook at that time? Are the odds that you were sending a message at that time? You know, so that's interesting to hear. Is this the same seller that you worked with to close?
That's it. So me and Rajan, my business partner, big shout out to him. I think you know Rajan. So we literally closed. We've been working on this for 9 months. And then we closed it. So basically how it went through is, if you don't mind, I can share your history of this deal. So,
Before you go on, you know, I would like to take everyone who's listening through, you know, the process. So, you know, you sort of shared how you got the deal, you know, which was off market. You went to like the Facebook groups. And I just wanted to give more credence to that, because as much as there's quite a number of paid acquisition channels where you could look for multifamilies with flyers and, you know, do donut, and, you know, I think what you did is also a valuable way to find off market use, which is engaging with like groups of Facebooks that actually contains the real landlords, right? Because a lot of groups where people post stuff is full of realtors, full of property managers. So even if you post every single day, the people that are seeing your posts are the middlemen, right? But to your point, and I know I've heard this before, a lot of people would go to Kijiji, for instance, and they will go to the rent section, right? And they would go engage the people that are looking to rent their properties, because anyone who's looking to rent is either a property manager or the owner, right? So going directly to owner, going to Facebook or going to Kijiji and posting in groups that have landlords, property managers, is another good way to find off market use. So I just wanted to point that out to anyone who's listening.
No, absolutely. Okay. Like, I totally believe on, you know, even today I look for deals in Marketplace and look for deals in Kijiji and look for deals in, you know, Facebook groups, right?
Yeah.
Like, this motto never leaves me, right? Like, you got to ask, like, and it's given. Like, you just need to ask if you need something, right? This is one of an example, but there are so many things. You could, you know, you might need a contractor, you might need a realtor, you might need an investor, like anything you need to ask, and there's so much help out there beside you. You know, the only way is people know if you're hungry is you have to tell them. So that's the true only way, right? So,
okay. Yeah. So, you know, as much as, you know, this podcast usually focuses on a whole lot on wholesaling, but we try to center the conversations around like off-market deals and, you know, finding off-market deals, financing it and facilitating it. So I'd like to get your thoughts on just the entire process of how you know, found a deal, which you shared with us, you know, how you like had the conversation with the seller, you know, the negotiations, you know, the numbers, how you financed the deal and how you eventually closed the deal, right? Because it's very important for everyone to understand the full life cycle of how off-market deals are essentially found, financed and actually closed them.
Absolutely. So
if you could walk us through like what happened next. So after the guy reached out to you, he said he wants to sell 37 units, you know, after he blew your mind, what then happened?
So right after that, you know, we set up a call, we talked about the properties, and then he told me his asking price, right? At that point, I started researching about what's the price per door in the area, right? So this is a bunch of portfolios, right? It's a 15 unit, it was a 9 unit, 3 triplex, 2 duplex, and a single family home, and a lot. So it was all close to each other. And he was selling it because him and his partner, they were getting into new constructions. So he was selling this portfolio and he had it for 2 years, right?
Okay.
So that was the initial conversation. And then he gave us a price. Since this is an off market, we were dealing directly with the seller. There was no any middleman, right? So it was just me and him. And right after that, he gave me a price and I did my research and I said, this is the price that, you know, I would want it to go. And then during that time, it was 2.1 million, right?
Okay.
For 37 units. And he gave me, I think it was at that point, 300K VTB.
Okay.
So vendor take back for, I think, 5% interest for 5 years.
Okay, not bad.
Okay, so at that point, so I did
monthly payments or balloon payments?
It's a balloon payment.
Okay, so no payments for 5 years, and then you pay everything at the end of the 5 years.
Well, he wanted to do no payments for 3 years, and then start paying him after 3 years.
Oh, I see. Right? Okay. And I just wanted to point this out, because in the acquisition phase or in the negotiation phase, we had an episode where we spoke about VTBs and the point at which you are speaking with the seller. At what point do you know that a VTB is in the works, essentially? So after I guess the question to you is...
Yeah. No, I understand your question. So basically, you're like, people who are listening, you know, the key is, when do you ask this question of VTB, right? And the key is, do you ask it in the first two calls? So that's where you need to know more about your owner. Like, what is his goal and why is he selling it? Is he very interested to sell, or he's like just checking the market and seeing how it is going, right?
Yeah.
Is he a potential person that who wants to do it? And the good thing about this investor is he's already an investor and he knows the game, right? It's not that I have to educate, because sometimes you have to educate the seller about VTB, which not a lot of people know. If he's a sophisticated investor, so he already knows about it. And he's been another side of the equation where he got VTB from different sellers because he has two other properties. So it was no brainer for me to tell him, okay, we'll talk about the VTBs, right? So he himself gave an option on the third call that, okay, listen, if you're doing this way and I can, you know, help you support to close this deal, and I'll give you a VTB with these terms, right?
Nice.
So, it was the third meeting that we had, and then we negotiated on the VTB terms. And then at that point, I did, inspection. I flew down there, I did the inspection, and then I did the appraisal. So the appraisal came to 2.65. So I had it under contract at 2.1.
2.1, okay.
And the appraisal was 2.65, right?
Okay.
There was a really good equity, you know, even right to before we got it, right? So it was a really good deal where at that point, and then I had one investor who was ready to invest all my down payment, right?
Okay.
So the down payment was around 450.
Yeah.
And then he was ready to invest with me. So we both had a split. And he was ready to invest, and he was a passive investor. He was not an active investor. So I was the one active on the deal. And then we had around 180K on the reno to do some conversion on the projects, changing from electric and oil to propane. Because if you look at Nova Scotia, if you look at secondary market, B and C, a lot of properties and most of the rentals that we had in this portfolio were everything included. So electricity was included. So the goal is to put everything back to this tenants and then convert everything. So that's how it came in, right? And the funny thing about this deal is every time when you believe something, listen to your gut. Do not push the gut. Because every time I was talking to the owner, I had a feeling that this is sometimes it's good to be true. Like certain things that he was saying. And my gut was telling, okay, there's something here, but I was keep pushing. Hey, like he's giving me a chance. Let's do it. And I was dealing with, you know, financing. The financing told me that I need like 4 more weeks and I need phase 1 and phase 2. And I was going through that issue, right? And these sellers, they didn't have to do phase 1 because they assumed the mortgage from the previous sellers.
I see.
So they did not have to do. And when I went through their assumed mortgage, it will take 6 months. But they wanted to close faster. So I had the contract January and I was planning to close in March. So I had only a month and a half. So I was doing everything out of sand. I was able to find the money, my partner within a month and a half. So going through all this time scenarios, and this is what I was, you know, you live and learn, right? So I was asking for extension and the seller came to me and said, I'm willing to give you extension, but you have to pay the expenses.
Okay.
I was like, how do I, you know, it doesn't make sense. How can I pay 37 units of electricity expenses and the other stuff? And I'm not even sure, like, if the 3 weeks I'll be able to close because it depends on my financing. So
were you firm at that time?
I was what?
Were you firm at that time when you were still conditioned?
Yes.
You were firm.
We were firm. And then we were just asking for an extension for the closing date. Right.
Got it. Okay.
So at that point, like we were like, okay, I need to really, you know, ask for an extension because I wanted to, you know, close the deal.
But hold on. Sorry. This was in March, right?
But this was in March. So I was supposed to close in March 13th.
And then you closed when? Because it seemed like it took 9 months, right?
That's a story. So I couldn't close. So basically he came and told that, you have to do this because he was not willing to work with me at that point, right? Because I was doing everything. He was pissed the fact that I couldn't close the date that I told him. But I was literally showing him, hey, I'm doing all this process. This is what I'm stuck, right? And he was not ready to pay work with me. And then I said, and then he told me like, hey, like I can't do this. He was like, you know, if you're willing to pay like, let's say 3 weeks of expenses, then I, you know, with my coach, we looked at it and we're like, hey, this doesn't make sense. I'm not going to bill because I already, at that point, I already spent 20 grand, right? Because you have to pay, you have to pay your inspection and you have to do evaluation and then you have to do appraisal. And then on top of that, the bank wanted me to do phase one, right? Which I was pushing to do not phase one because I was telling, hey, there's no any oil leaks. I gave the old phase one that he did and whatnot, right? So, and then on top of that, this guy, I mean, the seller was not willing to work with me at that point. He's like, hey, like just not helping me doing it. And I had to walk away with the deal, right? Because, and then on top of that, I paid for the money that I, the time that the property manager, his property manager spent. Because when you do the inspection and whatnot, this is what you need to know, whoever is listening, when you're actually working in a multifamily, make sure who's going to pay for it because you're going to call their time. When you close the deal, it's okay because you're going to work with the same guy or with another guy. But if you don't, then who's going to pay for it? So these are the stuff. It was expensive for me, but I learned from it, right?
So play this back. You eventually walked away from the deal.
Correct.
And you were firm. So were there any repercussions? Because from a wholesaling standpoint or from an off-market standpoint, usually whenever we write contracts, like our contracts are usually conditional, as you know, and it's only when the deal is assigned, which is essentially guaranteeing that there's an exit in place, that's only when we waive conditions. So in 9 out of 10 cases, maybe 99 out of 100 cases, we are always never firm on a deal unless it's been exited to another buyer, then we go firm. So it seems like on your end, this off-market deal that you had under contract, you were already firm and then you started to have issues.
No, I have to rephrase it. So I was not firm. I was asking extension to be firm because I was telling, okay. Because I had my appraisal. I didn't tell them exactly the appraisal, right? But I was asking the extension to make it firm because I was getting, the insurance was there, the appraisal, I know the appraisal, I have like 500K equity, right?
Got it. Okay.
I had the financing because literally the financing was there because I know I have the money raised to close the deal. And then I have the VTB in place. The only thing just to go, like go, right?
Okay.
So, yeah,
okay.
If I would have been firm, then he would have, you know, had other repression that I could have got, right? But even before that, you spent all this time and I paid for the inspection, and then I paid for the property manager's time, which I never talked about.
Yeah. So this is something that's very different between handling and working with off-market properties on the residential side and on the multifamily side. On the residential side, because comparables are more around like sold comparables, like you could check the comparables of a property by just looking at what's sold around. But with multifamily, there's a few due diligence items you need to do, like inspection, appraisal, and those things are upfront. Like you come out of pocket for the money. So chances are that with a residential property, you might not be out of pocket for funds, you know, by the time you want to go firm. But with multifamily, you might have spent like 20, 25K.
It depends on how big it is. And on top of that, you would have put a deposit too.
Yeah.
This is without the deposit.
Which is not $500, $1,000.
It could be like, you know, from 15K to 50K, depends on how big the unit is. right? So that's why you have to be very clear about what you're doing. Like, you know, there's plus and minus, you know, when you're dealing with the seller directly, right? And at that point, then I paid for the VTB with the lawyers, because my lawyer was like, hey, like they just sent one email and that's it. Like, I don't know why they're, and then the seller told me to, you know, pay for the lawyer fees. And my lawyer was like, let's go back to, and I said, I don't want the energy at all, right? So fast forward after 8 months. So this is the key about this deal. The whole 8 months, the property manager was calling me every month because he doesn't have a good rapport with the seller, but he had a good rapport with me because we talked and I told him, you want to.
Yeah.
And then I told him that, hey, like, I want to pay your time, and I paid it. And right after that, he was like bringing me off market deals. He was bringing me deals because he felt bad that the seller did that to me.
And got it. Okay.
The whole time he was telling me, hey, these guys came and saw the property, but nobody bought it. So he was telling me exactly
what. So he was giving you all the deets, all the information.
All the details. And he was like, hey, this is what happened. Somebody came and saw and didn't go through. And 6 months, 7 months later, nothing happened. And, you know, after 9 months, nothing happened. And now we made a little switch in our view that we're doing, right? So my business partner, Rajan, you know, who came into the deal.
I'd like to say something, and my apologies for cutting you short. So there's two things that came to mind as you were speaking. One is the fact that you built a relationship with the property manager who started feeding you off-market deals. And property management companies are also another source of off-market deals, right? Because there's no other person that engages with the seller directly than the property manager.
100%.
Right? And I know I've heard of wholesaling companies or flipping companies that buy property management companies to be able to get access to off-market sellers, or partner with property management companies to get access to off-market sellers. So I just wanted to call out the fact that's another channel that's not really talked about a lot that you just mentioned. And the fact that you were following up with this property manager for 6, 7, 8 months speaks to the power of follow-up. That's also something else that, you know, people don't take into account. You get in touch with a lead. In 1 month, the deal doesn't happen. You walk away. You don't keep in touch, but you don't know when that lead is going to decide to sell. You know, so maybe walk us through what happened like in the 8th, 9th month and how
Absolutely. The deal so eventually 9 months, came. So me and my business partner, Rajan, that this is why during those times, and I, you know, I was networking and I do a lot of networking. And then, you know, we were listening, you wanted to partner with somebody that you have same values with, you have the same goals, and the wavelength should be exactly complementary. If you both think the same, I don't think so that's a good partnership, right? Because you're both to think the same and you're excited about same things, you're sad about same things. So you should have values, right? So back to my business partner. So he went and he saw this deal, and then this is the power of sharing your story as well, not the wins that didn't go through. I still call it a win because end of the day, you'll learn so much from it. And I don't see it as a failure because I started sharing about what went wrong so people can learn that mistake. So when I was sharing this and Rajan came across and he's like, hey, I saw this property again and then I think they just sold something. And he started, you know, negotiating with the owners. But I gave him all the information about like, hey, let me just be in the back end. And I'm going to tell you exactly what I did. And he has the right? So he had the inspection report. He had the appraisal report. And then he is an amazing negotiator, right? Mm. From 2.1, he was able to bring to 1.55.
Whoa!
Yes. Because the market, like it was not selling. Nobody, we knew that from the property manager that people were coming in, they were afraid to buy because it was a secondary market and it was outside province and nobody wanted to do that. And the funny thing is Rajan had properties on the same street. So the story was such a good, relatable story that, hey, I have the property in the same street and I know your property market value. And I know that this is the price per door. And if you're okay with that, then let's go ahead, right? So at that point, from the seller's view, it's like, hey, three people came in, the deal didn't go through. It's been in the market for a year and it's off market. I don't know what. At that point, it went to on market, right?
Got it.
And
okay.
They didn't get a whole lot of traction. They had it, but nobody like couldn't close it, blah, blah, blah. And then he went in, and then he was able to negotiate at 1.55, but even better with VTB with 0% interest.
Whoa! Okay.
And then,
wow, so the deal just got way better with time.
Exactly. And then right after that, then we got so many shut down in terms of, you know, financing. We had to go through, you know, different creative strategies, right? In terms of like, you know, keeping collateral, because my properties are in Montreal, his properties are in Nova Scotia. And the lenders came back and told us, hey, you know, we cannot take your property into consideration, his property being yours and out of province. But not just the province, but it's in Quebec. We don't do deals in Quebec. We don't take, because it's the different rules, mortgage rules.
Yeah.
And the same property in the same street, not in the same city. So they said, you have to find somebody who can give a collateral only in Toronto, Ottawa, or Halifax. Only these three bigger cities. They don't even want to do with small cities. So they came with a lot of complications, and we were working literally, I think, 6 months for this deal. Okay. And we were able to find two investors who invested in this deal. And like, there were so many instances that we had to really give up and say, I mean, we didn't give up, but we were like, hey, I don't think this is going to work. Every single day, me and Rajan, we were brainstorming, and we were like, okay, now what? Because every time we go with something, the lenders came back and said, no, this won't work. And we'll be like, okay. And then we got so many extensions, and we literally told them, hey, this is what we're working on, so you have to work with this. At that point, they were literally okay to do anything at this point, because they know we already spent the time, money. And then we were able to finally close it. And now we're in the transition of, you know, conversions, renovations, and then it's basically BRRRR. And then we are changing tenant turnovers, raising rents from 700 to 1250. So it's been such a crazy journey, like how it went from there to today, right? And big shout out to Ryan, who really helped in, I mean, he was the main reason for this deal to close, where, you know, he had the negotiation skills and he knew exactly what to say, how to say, and he was able to do it.
Okay, man. You know, like, this story is very representative of what I see a lot in the off-market space, where a lot of sellers, when they are speaking with you one-on-one and you're trying to negotiate with them, they usually feel that there is a greener grass on the other side, like the grass is greener on the other side, you know. And then they say, don't worry, I'll go to the market and I'll test it out. But I find that once you go to the market, that's the best feedback. Like, the market is the best feedback. If no one buys it in 6 months, then the market has basically, like,
told you that the proof
your house
missing,
is
right.
Exactly right. So at that point in time, a lot of sellers come back, hey, are you still interested? But the truth is, at that point, there's now the MLS history. Now people have seen that it has stayed on the market for that long, and buyers can be very aggressive. Like, once they see that it hasn't sold, like Rajan, you know, I wouldn't want to be on the same negotiating table with him when I'm selling my property. You know, if I'm expecting 2 point something million, and then he comes and offers me 1.5. But, you know, that's what we see in the off-market space, where, like, sellers are usually looking to get the highest price. And if you don't give them what they want to go to the MLS. Well, it's only the follow-up.
Absolutely. So this was a crazy, you know, deal. It literally told us, you know, if you're working on a deal and it doesn't work out, doesn't mean that it won't come back to you. You just keep following up. You don't know what sellers are going through, right? At the end of the day, you just have to change your equation. Think like, hey, what would you do if you're them, right? So it's because one day you're going to be the seller. One day you're going to be the buyer. So it really depends on how you're thinking and showing, right? So it's a great lesson I learned last year when I was trying to work with it. Now, having the same principle of, you know, what would happen and just go with it. And at the same time, focusing on more on mindset about, you know, how we meet the right people and how to raise money and how do you, you know, find the deals. It really just comes hand in hand with not just, hey, like, I'm just going to do this and then come back. Constant everyday view of how you see things. You have to move the needle very little in your head so that it happens tremendously outside.
Okay. So thanks a lot, man. We are nearing the end of the show, but there's a question that I want to ask you. So given the fact that you've sort of invested across multiple provinces, you know, you mentioned Montreal, you mentioned Moncton, Nova Scotia, and, you know, you've done single families, you've done student rentals, multi-families. Like, if you had one piece of advice, you know, for anyone who is listening, you know, with respect to just how you found or how you find off-market properties, you know, how you finance them or how you close them, what would that advice be? Just given the wealth of experience that you shared across these different provinces and across these different asset types.
I would say just narrow down to what you want at first. Just because, you know, I'm saying that go find multifamily, it doesn't mean that you have to do it. It basically goes to your why, what your strategy is and why you want to do it. Sometimes, like 2 years ago, my main goal was, you know, having a student family because student rental because I wanted the cash flow. So try to understand why you want it, and then go by how you can get it. Right.
Got it.
Then the how would be, you know, my advice is just go to Kijiji on a basic if you want to do off market, and then tell a lot of people that what you want. Go to different groups and then find off market guys, and then put an ad on Kijiji that I need a property that I'm buying, I want it, this is what I'm looking for. Go to Facebook market group and find different properties. And back then there was not different groups, and now there are so many groups that you can really leverage, right? So I really recommend that. Even on Instagram, go and find, you know, off market. And if you're in Ontario, go to Digi. If you're other provinces, you know, find people who are doing what you want to do. That's exactly what it is, right? So
cool, man. All right. Bava, you know, dropping all the bombs. So there's a question that we ask everyone, you know, before we close the show, which is, can you tell us your greatest L in real estate, your greatest learning, your greatest loss, you know, something that you look back and you're like, I can't believe that happened. Like the worst ever thing that's happened for you in real estate, you know, what was it and what did you learn from it?
I thought the worst thing happened was when I had to walk away from the deal. But I think that's the best thing that happened to me in terms of to how I need to react things and how I need to take things. Because in life, everything is not always green and success.
Yeah,
you have to really know how to deal things when things are not right in your way.
Okay.
And that's the biggest lesson I learned. And I had to go through that because right before that, everything I was learning and doing was working, and I was able to take it. But I did not know I had to go through that deal to know exactly things won't go in your way, 100%. That means that's a way of growing, because every time when you're succeeding, you'll get bored.
Yeah.
And you won't get, you know, you won't feel like, okay, this is happening. And I had to go through that to really learn more about how to deal with certain things. And end of the day, it's people's business.
Yeah.
And everybody is not same. So remember that, and just know that everybody's not the same. But there are people out there with the right intentions, and that people will attract you. The only thing is just trust but verify.
Thank you very, very much, Bava. So before we close the show, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, you know, are they going to find you in Montreal? Are they going to find you in Nova Scotia? Where are they going to find you? How can people find you, man?
Yeah, so the best way to reach out to me is on Instagram. So my personal handle is The Bava Man, and the Instagram is Rice Investments. So I do, you know, Let's Grow Together Live, which every Wednesday at 6 p.m. And then I teach people. I have my own social media course with Suman. It's social media. It's an 8-week course, you know, how you can use social media to propel your business, raise money, etc. And on top of that, which I really love, is my mindset. And I do conduct mindset retreats. We just finished one 2 weekends ago in Mont Tremblant. The next one is January. And if you're interested, and if you want to just have a chat, just DM me, and then I'll be more than happy to reach out.
Okay. Thank you very, very much, man. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. So that's it, folks. You know, thank you very, very much for listening to the Deals Estate Wholesaling Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please do not forget to rate and review us on Apple, Google, and Spotify. And be sure to hit that subscribe button so that you know when Pava's episode drops and when the other episodes drop. So until then, remember, a deal a day keeps scarcity at bay.